Beck Nazar and Craig McEwen here on Beck and the Boss. We welcome in now the legendary Cam Cole. Cam, thanks a lot for giving us part of your day. I've been making the point, you know, you've covered this team for a long time. I've been making the point today that Jim Benning and this group have been loyal to a fault to some degree. Is that fair to say, or is that not fair to say?
Oh, no, absolutely fair to say. You know, and he's had his critics, and I think there's some justification, certainly on the pro scouting side of things, but it's hard to argue with the draft record, isn't it?
Yeah, Benning has done a really nice job with the draft record, and some people always talk, Cam, about the Canucks are a bit cursed, or they can't get it done, and you've covered a ton of hockey. You've been around the National Hockey League a lot and seen a lot of hockey in this market and that. With where the Canucks are at right now in their development and some good young players in Pedersen and Hughes and a good goalie in Thatcher Demko, it would appear at least, although the results haven't shown it necessarily this year, that they do have the makings of something that could work quite nicely down the road.
I think they do. I think their problem has been surrounding those young players with enough productive pieces to help them out. And I think, you know, they're in danger of being a team that never quite surrounds the stars with quality help. And that could hamstring them if they don't get a little bit better at the evaluation of, you know, free agents, pro hockey players in other organizations that can actually help out. I don't see a lot of quality beyond about six or seven players on the team.
Cam Cole joining us. Want to get your impressions of what's going on in day one of the Masters, an event I'm sure you've covered many, many, many times. Just your early impressions of the round so far.
Well, it looks like the course is playing in enormously difficult, more difficult than most Thursdays. It kind of looks like a Sunday. The greens are hard and fast and brown already. There's hardly any grass on them. And I think if they don't water, they're gonna have a very high winning score here for the week, which may be exactly what they were after following Dustin Johnson going 20 under last fall. I think the people that operate the Masters do not like to see their course humbled, and DJ definitely did that last year. So I think they've set it up this way. Got a little cooperation from the weather, and it's been a tough go for these guys today.
Cam, you have been to Augusta more than a few times, as Bick mentioned. What makes that place so special? For those of us who watch it on TV and haven't had the opportunity to be there, what is it that makes the Masters, you know, must-see TV, but also a very special place in the whole world of golf?
Well, I mean, part of it, undeniably, is familiarity. People have been watching major championship from this venue for forever, since golf on TV was invented, essentially. So when you look at this tournament, you feel like you know every hole, you feel like you know every shot. Certainly since they started showing all 18 holes, it's now there's no more mystery to the nuances of the golf course. You kind of, and when you play it, it's exactly what you think it's going to be. It's a comfortable driving course and just a horrendously difficult around the greens. And, you know, so it's perfectly manicured. It's the first kind of sign of spring for Canadians. When you start to see the pictures from Augusta, you know it's summer's coming. And it just feels like a bit of a rebirth. And honestly, to get there on Monday morning when the week starts and not a soul has walked on those grounds, a little different now with the women's amateur the weekend before and the drive, pitch, and putt, but it's so perfectly manicured when you get there that you just can't believe that this is a golf course and not some kind of a public botanical garden or something. It's just a pretty place with a lot of history It was my favorite assignment of the year, that and the British Open.
This might be a bit strange to ask, but I'll pose it to you this way. Because we talk about, you know, majors and always having this pressure and the fans and all this stuff. But is Augusta the only course on the tour that, you know, the course itself has a presence to lead itself to, you know, building that internal pressure for the golfers?
I don't know that it's the only. I think the Players' Championship, for instance, is a course that gets people's players' guts in a knot before they ever step on the first tee. And I think a lot of the U.S. Open venues are like that, primarily because of the way they set up the course. Whereas the golf course itself here, it almost doesn't matter what the setup is like because, as I said, everybody knows the golf course. Everybody has seen it a million times. But there is an aura about the place that does definitely get into players' heads. They want this thing so badly, and sometimes they can want it too badly. And I think we're seeing that with Jordan Spieth again. We've seen it with lots of players, Rory McIlroy for sure, who's had another not very good first round, Greg Norman in his day. These are guys that just wanted this championship so palpably that it affected their nerves and affected their heads at crucial times. And I think Augusta National does do that.
Cam, what is your best memory of a Masters that you've covered? Maybe one or two for that matter, but what sticks out to you in the times that you went down there to cover it? A big win, a big shot, or where is it for you when it comes to that moment?
Well, I don't think for any Canadian that was down there at the time, anyone will ever forget Mike Weir winning. It was a miserable weather year. That was the year of the Martha Burke women's protest. And so there was a lot of stuff going on in the background, you know, rounds that weren't finished and had to be completed the next morning and so on. But Mike was so solid that week, and it was such a great Canadian story because he's not a long hitter. It was a wet week. It should have favored the big bombers. You know, there are a lot of things that were going against what you would think would favor Mike, but he was so solid. He made every putt he looked at, and, you know, I think some people feel it was kind of a fluke in some ways. And yet I look back at his year, and anybody that looks back at that year will see, you know, he won the Bob Hope earlier. He won at Riviera earlier that year. He was among the best players in the world at that moment and went on to finish, I think, tied third at the U.S. Open, you know, a couple months later, and ended up ranked number three in the world at that point. So this was a guy who brought all kinds of joy and pride to Canadian golf, and is still out there doing it.
What's the next breakthrough for Canadian golf, right? Because it's been a while since Mike Weir won, and also we still cherish that memory, but, you know, we're always looking for the next one. Is there a timeline that you look at and say, hey, there's a handful of golfers that can maybe replicate that?
Oh, sure. I think there's, you know, now two or three or four guys out there that, you know, on a given week can really compete. But if you're looking for the next one in Canadian golf, we're already seeing it. Her name is Brooke Henderson, you know, so she's a superstar on the LPGA Tour and really so consistent and so remarkable. But, you know, among the men, Mackenzie Hughes or Hadwin or Corey Connors, or, you know, there's so many now that it doesn't have to be a one-off in order for there to be a Canadian winner. There's lots of guys that can do it. And I think the next breakthrough is going to be whoever can step up on that major week and get it done. Looks like Corey Connors is so smooth and Mackenzie Hughes is so consistent. They're going to, you know, one of these guys is going to, I think, step up and do it one of these days.
Cam, the listeners probably don't realize, but there is a lottery aspect to going to majors. And if my memory serves, I was at Southern Hills when you were there for the U.S. Open, and I believe you won the lottery that year. And what that means is you get to play the course. But because you had an assignment and it went an extra day on the playoff, you couldn't play. So that was probably really disheartening. Did you ever win the lottery at the Masters, or know people who actually got to play the course just as it was set up on Sunday, the following day on the Monday?
I was very lucky. You can do it every 7 years. Once you've won the lottery, you're not even eligible for it for another 7 years. But I won for the first time, I think the fourth year I covered the Masters, the day after the Faldo-Norman duel, and then won it again the year Phil Mickelson won his first Masters, and then won it again, I think, in 2013, one of my last years down there. So I was lucky enough to play the course three times. And like I said, you feel like you've played the course a million times, because it really doesn't surprise you until you get to the greens. And I made a lot of the same mistakes each time. I think I shot 83, 84, 84 the three times I played it. And it was, I was okay with that, because the first to the last was like 18 years apart. So
it's Cam Cole joining us here. Before we let you go, does this year's version of the Masters lose some of its luster without Tiger, or is it still the course reigns supreme?
Oh, it's any tournament that Tiger's in increases the viewership, increases the excitement level. If he's in contention anywhere on the weekend, the numbers go crazy, and there's a reason for that. He's a wonderful player to watch, and there's no doubt this major misses him, but the Masters is the Masters, and it's played, you know, before without him, and it'll be played again, and it's going to produce a great finish on Sunday, because it always does.
Just one final thing on the Tiger front, Cam, and I was fortunate enough to be there when he won in 2002, the year before Weir won his. What is it like watching and following him? Because I don't know that people totally understand the circus that goes around a Tiger Woods group out on the course, and I feel really bad for the other golfers a lot of times, with people scrambling after Woods hits his shot to go to the next hole. What was that like for you, watching him, seeing him in person, and just the whole aura and sideshow that goes along when Tiger's out at Augusta?
Well, there's no doubt that he has an effect on the players immediately in the group in front of him, because people are always scrambling to get to the next shot. And usually that's right when someone in the group ahead is trying to line up one of theirs. So there's no doubt about it. It's a thrill for the people that manage to get along the front lines of the ropes and can get close enough to experience the sound of the strike of a Tiger tee shot, or the crispness of the iron shot, or, you know, you can almost hear the ball spin when he hits one out of a bunker. He's just a different kind of player with a different feel to him than anybody I've ever experienced, though, with the exception of maybe Nicklaus in his, and I didn't get to cover him in his prime, but I did see him win a major, and I was lucky enough to caddy for him in a course opening out here in Kelowna. And it's just, you know, he was an idol growing up, and I think those two guys are a different breed altogether from most golfers.
Cam Cole joining us here on Bick and the Boss. Cam, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the weekend watching Augusta.
I won't be moving very far from this chair. Thanks, guys.
Nice.